And I allowed the guy who prepared Operation Erebus, he selected everything. And he picked the time to do this. And I asked him, why? Why did you pick that time? And he told me why. And I said, okay, and why did you attack this facility? He said, because of this factor, this factor, this factor. And he's right. He was actually right. I mean, I prepared my list before I interviewed these three people. And when the report, when he showed me the infrastructure targets he intended to attack, I compared mine with his. And there was a few differences, obviously, because, you know, I prepared this earlier on. But he got most of them. Now, he's an intelligent guy. This individual's got a master's degree in emergency management. Terrorism has no interest to him whatsoever. And consequently, you take any individual who's motivated, you take any individual that's educated and been through our education system and got a degree in whatever, it doesn't matter what it is, they have the ability and the capacity to learn, research and everything else. And he produced an attack plan which would have devastated Toronto. So now I know, or I knew when we finished this in 2014, that it is possible for anybody to do this. So when I go to my meetings, I talk for about 5 minutes about Erebus, when people boo-hoo me, and I say, okay, well, you know, I proved that it can be done. So you have to figure out for yourself whether you're prepared to listen and make preparation to deal with these types of issues. I mean, do you remember when 911 occurred?
Yes.
Every door to every one of our major blocks, our towers, high towers in Toronto, had security on. Everyone went through a door and searched, right?
Yes, I remember.
Well, you've got 10,000 people going into a tower. 4 days later, it was business as usual. It's as if the whole world went away and we didn't have to do this anymore. Now, you don't have to protect and search everyone going in and out of a business tower, obviously. I realize that. But it's how quickly we forget. You know, we forget all the terrorist attacks that have been prevented by our intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies. There was a number of people arrested in Ottawa 2 years ago, and still it hasn't gone to court yet. These guys have 50 timers. That's 50 car bombs. You ask your average person, what happened in Ottawa 2 years ago? And They don't know.
It's almost a way of forgetting what happened in the past, but then once another terrorist attack does occur, then you remember that incident for a few days. You'd hope that one would remember for a longer period of time than a couple days, but I think that's one of the major issues of concern is the fact that people forget.
I know. They do, and they don't care because they're more interested in their iPhone, they're more interested in their Starbucks, and they're more interested in everything else. I just came down on the train, and I always look at people on the train. Nobody is totally aware of what's going on at all, you know, because everyone's doing exactly the same thing, iPhoning, watching a movie, making phone calls, sending texts or sending emails, etc. And that happens in all public transit around the world. So if I happen to take on my good life gym bag full of explosives, kick it under my chair and get off at university, and get off at York University, and then walk away, by the time that train gets into Union Station, my
it's
bomb goes off.
It's
an explosion. And I was going, how the hell did you get that bomb on it? But no one saw me leave it.
I think it's crucial for more people to have better situational awareness in terms of knowing who's sitting beside you, who's sitting across from you, who's doing what, why is someone accessing the train or the via rail with a huge bag and leaving it behind. So I think it's very crucial, and I do strongly feel that more people need to have that situational awareness. At the same time, being informed and being educated about the ongoing terrorism that's happening all over the world is essential.
Let me give you an example. Today, there was a Muslim gentleman getting on the train with me, and I saw him walk into the car park, so I stood behind him, and I followed him because I wanted to see what people's reactions. He was wearing the full Arab dress, which is rare in Canada.
Yes.
Okay. And he was dressed in a full Muslim Arab dress. Well, everyone looked at him. I got on the train, everyone carried on looking at me, then he sat down, and I sat beside him just over there, and I was looking at people's reaction to this individual. He had the beard, he had the hat, and everything else. And everyone was really interested in this guy. Why? Do they think that a terrorist is dressed like an Arab? Who said a terrorist is going to be an Arab or a Muslim?
Exactly. No, a terrorist will be in disguise. It's not necessarily obvious. Like, it's so easy to attack and to complete a terrorist attack. So it's like you said, it's not going to be someone that's obvious. It's going to be someone who is very good at blending in and knows what they're doing.
You're right. And as I said, I mean, you know, you cannot wrongly think the Muslims are bad, because they're not, because there's probably 97% of Muslims globally are law-abiding people who want to get on with their lives and their families, raise their families and do everything else. It's that small group of the Islamic fundamentalist Muslim terrorist groups that you've got to be careful of. So you know, everyone's reaction is a Muslim, is a Muslim, is a Muslim. And that shows ignorance again, because that is not true. Because there's various different types of Muslims, and they all believe in different things. So, you know, you can't sort of look at an individual who looks like he doesn't come from Canada and automatically think, well, that guy's suspicious.
Right,
because
certainly.
We live in a multicultural country. I mean, every single other person, if you look in here now and you went around and said, where do you come from? I'll bet you there's at least six countries represented here where we're talking now. So who's the good guys and who's the bad guys? You never ever know that. You've got to have an open mind. But that is another part of the education process, because I have a major client who is a religious leader. And I've been looking after this guy for 20 years in Canada. And it's amazing. I mean, I can walk with him to a cafe and have lunch or have a cup of coffee, and no one knows who he is. No one has a clue, yes. So why do you want to surround that guy with security? If he's wearing a tracksuit, my security people will wear a tracksuit. And he'll sit in a corner and no one... It's like your Hollywood stars. I know that's no comparison, but it's the best I can do. They wear sunglasses, caps over their head. They dress appropriately for whatever their age is. And then they go out, and unless you really stare, you know... You can sit there and have a clue sitting in the restaurant with you, you know. Unless they, you know, you come in with all that dressed up and ready to party. Yeah, you know who they are if you're interested in those people. But that's the unfortunate thing about it. But Canada, and I mean, as I said, I look for a word before I prepare my presentation, and I went through my thesaurus. And the only word I could come up with was complacency. And that's about the word that sums everything up that I tried to put over during that presentation. Was the fact that we have this complacency, and this is Canada, and nothing happens. So consequently, I all I worry about is my locus of influence, my family, my friends, my job, where I socialize and everything else, and everything else is blocked out. And that is fine. I mean, you know, no one is saying you've got to be thinking of terrorism 15 minutes a day, whatever the case may be, but at least be open to suggestions. The government, it's a government's responsibility to educate Canadian citizens. I mean, you know, I told, I mentioned the hotline, the RCMP hotline. I phoned this hotline to ask for information. I'm a security consultant. I identified myself. They obviously got my phone number because of the phone. And I said, so I'd just like to talk to somebody about what's the aim of this so I can refer your hotline number to my clients. Someone will get back to you, sir. I said, thank you very much. That was 2 years ago.
They still haven't gotten back to me
because they don't care. You know, and I can phone up again. And will something happen then? I have no idea. And I've spoken to other people who knew about this hotline in my business, and they said, yeah, filmed it, never heard anything back from it at all because it hasn't been set up properly. So we've got many, nothing is perfect, and it's easy to be the Monday morning quarterback, which is basically what I am. But at the end of the day, all I can do is tell people what I think. I'm not always right. In fact, I'm probably wrong a lot of times. But at the end of the day, someone has to stand up and say something. And it's been my experience during the last 20 years in Canada that no one's really interested in what's happening outside Canada. We're very insular. I'll tell you one more story. Senior executives used to wear the old maple leaf on their jackets when they travelled overseas. And they said that, you know, this identifies them not as an American, but as a Canadian. I said, fine. I said, what does the Ecuadorian flag look like?
They didn't know.
He said, I haven't got a clue. And I said, hang on, you're an MBA, you're a president of a large multi-million-dollar company. How do you expect someone in Ecuador to know what that is on your jacket? And he went, oh, never looked at it that way. Well, guess what? Yeah, I'm Canadian. I mean, when I first came to Canada, I didn't know the difference between a Canadian and American because the language was very similar. We dress identically to the Americans. At the moment, for the last 3 years, and I tell this to my American clients, the world hates Americans because the way they're being portrayed and the way, you know, the way they act and the way they watch the TV in the States with all these Fox News and all the other various agencies. So there's this hatred, and that hatred is being perpetrated within those countries by Islamists. So consequently, you know, you're an American oil company, you're a Canadian gas company, or you're an English offshore oil company, makes no difference. The die has been set now, and as I said in my presentation, the whole thing against ISIS has not been seen as the West attacking a criminal terrorist group. It's been seen as the West attacking Islam. And what ISIS is doing is not Islam. It's a bunch of guys that want to come to rule the world, and they will do anything in their power to intimidate people into giving them their own way. So consequently, you know, that's what your average Muslim is being forced there, is the fact that, you know, it's us against them. And, you know, but they're living in their country where that's the case. They come to Canada or the US, they do not see that, because you see everyone coexisting and getting on with it. I mean, I've had so many Muslim friends, it's unbelievable. And, you know, I love having these guys. I had a meeting on Saturday, actually. I came out to see one of my clients on Saturday downtown about a project. And I got talking about this. I said, how do you feel about this? And every time I say something or do a TV interview, I send him a link into it. And I say, I would appreciate your comments. And he really does. Because he's torn between being a Muslim, Islam, and the Islamic fundamentalist terrorists, and he doesn't want to really comment on it. And I asked him out. I asked him outright a year ago. I said, why don't the 95% of good guys deal with the bad guys? Can't do that. I said, why? I said, it's not as if it's a 50-50. I mean, the majority of Muslims globally are law-abiding citizens who just want to coexist. Why can't the majority influence the minority?
That's certainly an interesting comment. I have a lot of Muslim friends as well, and I can understand the religion in terms of differences and similarities. And it's oftentimes good to respect multiculturalism and diversity in Canada. I think that's something that we as Canadians are very proud of. But at the same time, we need to protect this country from future terrorism, future attacks. And I'm not saying that Muslims are terrorists. What I'm saying is that regardless of who comes into this country, we need to complete proper screening. We need to have that security in place in order to prevent another attack on the parliament, and in order to prevent the possibility of a 9/11 happening here in Canada.
Well, we did do that until the little boy's picture was on the front page of all the newspapers. And then all of a sudden, overnight, we had to forget all the rules, all the regulations, all the protocols, and we had to bring in 25, 30, 40,000 refugees without thinking. Just put them on a plane and bring them to Canada. Offload them, put them in some type of facility so we can monitor them, and then go through the process. What happens if 15,000 of those people are unsuitable? We send them back. People are being caught for the next 5 years trying to get a guy who claimed refugee status and failed. We know that from normal refugee failures, immigrant failures. So why bring that to the country, into the country, and have to deal with it here? Why don't we deal with it where they are? Because at the end of the day, these guys are going to come here and then go back. I mean, you look at the Lebanon. I mean, we had a lot of people come from the Lebanon years ago. And then when it all went quiet, because I was in Beirut in the good days. It was the French Riviera all over again on the Mediterranean. And then everyone left because of the wars and the faction fighting and everything else. But when there was an evacuation required, nearly 40,000 people wanted to be evacuated by the Canadian government, because they came to Canada, got their passports, lived in Canada 5 years, went back and carried on with their businesses, and their families grew up, And then when something happened, they go, Lebanon passport in my back pocket. I am a Canadian, and I need to be able to have the services of the Canadian government to get me and my family out of the country I've chosen to go back to and live in. So, I mean, they were going to change that, the ability of people to do that, years ago. It never happened, because you get all the human rights groups saying, oh, you can't do that, you know, because it's against your human rights and everything else. And sometimes human rights trumps everything, and it should in some cases, but in other cases it shouldn't. But you know, you're never gonna get the comparison to be able to do that.
Mr. Bell, I really want to thank you for sharing your expertise with all of your extensive experience in security, terrorism, and with your expertise as a president of Global Risk International. I really want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and do this interview with me.
And thank you for inviting me to do this, because I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about these matters to somebody who realizes what the problems are as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.